Welcome back to the land of the purple.
Welcome.
You're listening to the Purple Project Podcast.
The Purple Project Podcast is on. Going behind the scenes of Kansas State Athletics, from the action on the gridiron to the octagon of doom, and much more. Plus making rounds about the happenings in the community. Triple P is loud and proud and ready to take charge in the Big 12 Conference. Podcasting to the Little Apple, Kansas City, and the world. It's the Purple Project Podcast. And now, here's your host, Eddie Greer III.
K-State fam, y'all know what time it is. The late night edition of the Purple Project Podcast. Eddie Greer here in Manhattan, Kansas. Cold, very cold in Manhattan, Kansas. Y'all know what the deal is. For those of you new to the podcast or any former alumni on this podcast, y'all know what the deal is. K, this Purple Project Podcast, all about Kansas State Athletics. And we're recording on the same night, but a little bit later than usual, due to the K-State versus the number two team in the nation right now, Baylor, but they look awfully damn good to be probably the number one team in the nation, if you would ask me. The Pro Project Podcast, find it wherever you get your podcasts, whether it's Apple, Spotify, Audio Boom, Radio.com, and more, including Amazon Music. The Pro Project Podcast, one of the newest, latest editions on the K-State podcast, folks, and recording a little later on because of the K-State basketball game against the number two team nation, Baylor, tonight. And there's just no contest, folks, here, as Baylor just went in a triple digits against K-State for the second consecutive game against these two teams. Remember, these two teams played against each other in Bramlage, and Baylor put an ass-kicking on K-State then. They're doing the same thing here tonight, putting an ass-kicking on K-State once again. Bruce Weber's team, no life in this team whatsoever tonight, on the road in Waco. We got about less than 3 minutes left to play as Luke Kasubi turned the ball over, and K-State called a time. Well, it was actually an official timeout, though. So, but Kasubi turned it over, of a handful of turnovers for K-State in this game, and y'all gonna get some post-game coverage right now. We're gonna talk about both teams, women's basketball falling over the weekend, including falling last on Monday night as well. We'll get into that as well. This still the positives never in sight, folks. A lot of negative going on, and let's go ahead and bring on my co-host as usual for the podcast, Alex Aiden AA. What's up, man?
Well, you mentioned it, not a lot of positives. Continuing K-State, and I remember back in November when John Kurtz said, can you guys remember in the last 20 years a more, how do you say it, a moment in time where K-State was this bad in sports all at once, a low point this low? And he was saying that when the basketball team was treading water at the beginning of the season and the football team was kind of in the skid there at the end of the season. Well, it has just continued on, because this basketball team continues to be worse and worse, and the women's team is sure not going the way that was supposed to go. So pretty disappointing there. We'll get into that a little later, but all's good out here, Eddie. It's another week in San Diego. It's actually a very rainy and cold week in San Diego. Believe it or not, the high on Friday is in the 40s out here in San Diego. High in the 40s in San Diego, that doesn't happen very often. And it stormed all Monday. It stormed, it hailed. We had wind up to 60 miles an hour here, like you see in the Midwest. And then it snowed about, when you got up to about 1,500 feet, it was all snow in the mountains. Here just east of San Diego, 4 to 6 inches. So we've gotten some funky weather the last couple weeks. And, I've seen, like I said, I've seen a little bit of wintry mix. I've seen a little bit of hail. I've heard a little bit of thunder. It's been a little windy. And then it mixed in between, you get your 70 and sunny day. So I don't know what the weather's being pretty bipolar out here. It doesn't know what it wants right now. But hey, you know, what does it affect me? I'm here at home working away. So that doesn't have much effect on me. On Monday night, I told somebody, I said, on Monday night was the first time I was woken up in the middle of the night because of an actual storm in San Diego. I had, you know, I obviously when I lived in Kansas City growing up, there were times you'd be woken up by storms. Same thing in Manhattan when I went to school at K-State. Same thing in Texas when I worked in Wichita Falls at KUZ-TV. But I'd never been woken up by a storm ever since being out here, because storms are so rare. But I actually did get woke up by a storm Monday night, and I was like, okay, I can check that one off the list now. So I have now officially been woken up by the window shaking from the wind and some hail hitting the window. So yeah, so that's added to the list. But you know what? The fact that that's the high in my week, when you mix in K-State sports, that tells you something right there. Because oh my gosh, yeah, Eddie, I can't tell you with K-State sports. And I just hoped that the men's team, Eddie, we'll get into this, but I just hoped. All I said on the last episode, Eddie, is just, can I be a little competitive? Can I be a little more competitive? This is the whole reason I brought up the Bruce Weber thing last week. If you can't even play competitive, they said on the TV today, they said, how about K-State just show some pride? The announcer said that.
The announcer said that, The announcer said that.
Call him out, that, it is bad. It is bad. And it's true. They're showing no pride. They don't look like they give two bleeps out there. And it's disappointing and it's discouraging. And I'm really looking at the basketball team in a different light from when they were struggling earlier in the year. Because at least it looks like they cared. At least they looked like they were improving. And those things just aren't there right now. It's really disappointing. And that's why I brought the Bruce Weber analogy up. I want Bruce Weber to make it through this year and to give him a shot next year. But if his team's going to continue to act like they're not caring and they're getting blown out by 50 points in a game, I don't care what you're ranked or where you're playing. If you lose that game by 50 points, that's not okay. That's not okay, and that will never be okay. It never should be okay. You know, losing by 20-plus at home and just being like, you know, that should never be okay. I mean, K-State, since I talked to you last, Eddie, will have lost by a combined, most likely, over 70 points in two games. I mean, that's a problem. That is a problem. So we have a lot to talk about.
Yep, a lot to talk about in the next hour and a half. I got my timer set, so we're already almost 10 minutes in, but so much to get to within that time span. As this is a late night edition. If you're listening in Manhattan, well, this will be out on Friday, of course, as I'm recording that. Now it is 10 o'clock Central Time Zone, so not quite, well, getting closer to my bedtime, but we got a lot to talk about. So, but yeah, Alex pretty much said it all right there, folks. 8 seconds left. Baylor in total control from the jump of this game. 107-59. Baylor, and yeah, that just went final, folks. 107-59. Baylor Bears put a whooping on the young K-State team once again on the road. And yeah, this team, probably the highlight of the year and for this team so far. Probably, yeah, you got to go back to that three-court shot by Antonio Gordon that went in plenty of time right at the buzzer just at the first half inning. But other than that, this team showed no life. And with the West Virginia game, they're turning it on just a little bit, 5 minutes in. Yeah, we talked about it. I mean, they had an opportunity to be more competitive in that game, and they did not, losing by double digits there. And then here, getting absolutely creamed by obviously one of the best teams in the nation. But still, though, only one player in double digits. That was, of course, Nigel Pack's return to the starting lineup after being out for several games due to being contact tracing and everything. He had 11 points in the game, 5 assists, 5 rebounds. He was perfect from the free throw line, but only 1 of 6 from 3-point line. And that's the story of the game, really, when you look at the score box here. Baylor Alex was raining threes all over the place here. Baylor, 60% from downtown. The K-State's 25%. That is not, definitely not going to cut it. And this has been a problem for K-State all year. Jacking up threes, 5 of 21. That's not going to cut it for them. I mean, yes, they were a lot better from the free throw line, 75%, but the negative all year long has been jacking up threes and just a lot of staying around going on. 5 of 21, glaring stat right there, and getting burned by, obviously, one of the better guards in the conference, Davion Mitchell, 31 points on K-State in this one. 7 of 9, Alex, from three-point range. He was
hot tonight.
Yeah, he was on fire at one point. Yes. In one point in this game, a 36-2 run. I couldn't believe it. 36-2 run. And the ESPN two guys, the stat showed it right there. They couldn't believe it either, and they called K-State out on that.
I think Eddie, that's when we got to comment and show some pride. I think it was right when they showed.
Yeah, yep.
They showed the graphic. That's a 36-2 run or 36-3 run, whatever it was. I think that's right when they said it, because you mentioned it. I mean, they were, you know, they shot the ball 58% from the field, 61 from three, and everything was, they could get whatever they wanted. I mean, everything was there. K-State was giving no resistance on defense. So, I mean, they could do whatever they want.
Yeah, so, man, this is not what you want to see. And then McGurl turned the basketball over. 21 total turnovers when you look at from all aspects of the game here. So, McGurl had 6 of them. McGurl had 2. Dejuan had 3 of them as well. So, not a good night in the turnover aspects of this one as well. So, everyone got a chance to play for K-State, I guess. That's another positive you want to look at it as like that. Luke Kasupi continues to show why he's a very good, talented shooter. He had 8 points in the game. He and Miguel did at 18 points in the game off the bench. Rudy Williams only had 1. And in that trio, you might as well put Antonio Gordon in that 8-point trio as well, with that long 3-pointer to end that first half there. 8 points. Siri Lewis had 9 on the bench. But yeah, Nigel Pack, the only person in double figures. As far as points go, while Baylor had 3 players in double figures as well. K-State losing another conference game. I believe that is, you can correct me on this or not, I believe that's their 8th straight since winning their first one at Iowa State. I know they're not, haven't updated yet there. Yeah, Baylor came in this game, 14-0. They're now 15-0. I believe that is right. Cats, yeah, they've lost 8 straight conference games, and the commentators mention it as well. After A&M, and again, like I mentioned last week on the podcast, I have not paid attention to Texas A&M. I have nightmares when it comes to them on the basketball court thing, so it probably won't get any worse, any better this weekend with the Big 12 SEC Challenge this weekend, or... Yeah, yes it is. It is this weekend. So they're appetizing a lot of good matchups there. But with K-State, they have to go to A&M. I might be wrong. It might be up the other way around. I don't have the schedule with me, but...
I think it's in Manhattan.
Yeah, you might be right about that. But yeah, so... And then after that, it's just a gauntlet. We talked about it last week's show. A gauntlet for them, and I don't see a win anytime soon. I don't know why everybody's here in Manhattan so optimistic that they can get one on KU for whatever reason. Yes, KU's not.
Are they really?
I mean, there's some people that I've heard listen to saying that. Oh, I mean, don't be surprised if, you know, K-State will get to sneak up on a Texas or a KU or whatever. I'm like, seriously?
I'd be surprised.
I would be.
If they beat either one of those teams.
I would be surprised, but for sure, if they do that. But that they're not showing me a whole lot that, even with KU losing, 3 in a row over the weekend and lost to OU, I watched that game from beginning to end in that one.
Oh, you just beat Texas on the road.
Yep, yesterday, last night, yeah, Austin Reeves, yep. So, I mean, some people have some still optimism, but right now, I just don't see it right now. And, man, I mean, getting having showing no life on the road, and now you got to go back home. And I probably were going to here look up A&M's record here while you're talking, but yeah, there's a lot to be answered for, and this is why people are restless here in the Little Apple about Bruce Weber and his team, and you're one of them. So it's, I mean, and I'm sure, and I brought this up. I mean, I'm not there yet, but definitely. I mean, next year you play like this, yeah, you're gonna be on the hot seat, and you're gonna be hit. Don't let the door hit the way out. So, not a good look. I understand Baylor's a great team. I understand that, but tonight there's just no life for this K-State team on the road. There, and turn the basketball over doesn't help. You hear it all the time. Too many turnovers on the road. You can't turn the ball over that much. 20, I'm looking at Baylor's stat. 20, what did I say? I said 20. Yeah, like I said, it's late night, folks. Yeah, 21 turnovers on the road. That's not going to cut it. And being behind the eight ball, way behind the eight ball on the road, it's not going to cut it either. So K-State's got a lot of answers to answer for here as we go forward in the year. And I just don't, and I'm being honest, I just don't see another win.
Yeah. I mean, you first off, you don't know. I mean, you thought Iowa State might be another win that you could get. That game got canceled. I think it canceled. It got postponed. And
it was postponed, yeah.
Scheduled. At this point, I don't know. The Big 12 may say, what's the point of playing that game between those two teams? I don't know if they will or not, but... Yeah, Eddie, you mentioned the point. You know, by the way, quickly, too, going back to the turnovers, 21 tonight against Baylor, 28 on Saturday against West Virginia. So K-State has combined to have 49 turnovers in the last two games.
Yeah, I mentioned that. Yeah, I mentioned, sorry, cut you off here for a second, but I mentioned that in the daily there, yeah. That we treated a stat about some last couple, and that was before this game, like some 50 turnovers plus in the last two games. And you add on this one, 21, that's over 70 turnovers for this team.
That's not good. That's you're not good right there. I mean, and the thing is, when you watch them too, Eddie, it's not like... It's not like any crazy turnovers. It's stupid. I mean, it's stupid, self-inflicted turnovers. It's throwing the ball away. It's throwing the ball off of somebody's leg. It's just a bad pass and just, you know, just carelessness. It's just so many, tons of them are from carelessness, which really just shows a lack of focus from the guys at this point. But getting back to what you initially said about me being conflicted on Bruce, you know, I don't know if I'd say I'm conflicted because I don't feel like firing him is the right move, but every game that happens, like that West Virginia game, like that the game that we saw tonight against Baylor, which will be a couple days out once people listen to this, every time I see one of those games, it makes me more uneasy because what we're seeing right now should never be okay. Like, that should never be acceptable, in my opinion, at Kansas State University, with the success that basketball program has had, winning two Big 12 titles, making two Elite Eights in the last decade, being one of the winningest college basketball teams the last decade in the Big 12. And they were in the top, I'm going to say it was top three or top four. And most winningest teams in the decade from 2010 to 2020 in the Big 12. And so, you know, when you have that success and you win two Big 12 titles and you make two Elite Eights and you do the things that they've done this last 10 years, this should never be okay. It just should never be okay. And so when I see game after game happen like that, it makes me more uneasy because the more that we gloss over it, the more we're saying that's acceptable. That's fine. You know, you know, whatever. You know, we can deal with it. Well, no, that never should. I understand a rebuild, but a rebuild shouldn't ever go as low as what we're seeing right now. I think we're seeing with Coach Weber is I think we're seeing a coach who He's a little too comfortable right now, to be 100% honest. I think he knows that there's not a lot of pressure from the administration, and I think he's a little too comfortable. I think he's a little too comfortable. Yeah, they say competition breeds success. You know the saying, Eddie? When there's somebody who's not playing up to their level on a team, and you draft somebody, or you sign somebody, or you recruit somebody to compete with that person, typically it raises their, you know, it raises their competition. It raises their level of competition. Mm-hmm. It raises their game to the next level. You know, that's the type of effects it can have. But I think the fact that there's not a fire lit under Bruce's ass right now, he's just kind of like, okay, you know, whatever. Like, you know, COVID, young guys, yeah, we'll just go out and just, you know, just go out and just see what happens. I don't know, Eddie. I'm not in the building. I don't want to
be right.
of that. I'm just saying, from an outsider's view, it seems to me that he may be a little bit comfortable, and it seems like the young players are getting frustrated with all the losing, and there's really not a lot of senior leadership to help right that ship.
Right, yep.
And so they're just getting frustrated, and they're just kind of giving up, and they're kind of having the effects that you would expect to have. You would expect players to have in that situation, and that's where the coaching staff has to step in and help these guys kind of right the ship. And I'm not saying win the beat Baylor on the road, Eddie. No, I don't expect K-State to go to Baylor to win. I don't expect K-State to be West Virginia at home. And, you know, I just, at this point, I told you, I want to see the players progress throughout the season, and I want to see the team get better. I want to see progression as the season goes. That was the whole thing. I said, I don't care if this isn't about wins and losses. This season isn't about wins and losses. This is about getting better, learning the system, getting better on defense,
growing in your role at K-State, and then, you know, come back next year ready to see if you can win some games. The problem is K-State's trending the opposite. While things were rough at the beginning, they kind of got a little hot. It seemed like things were beginning to kind of, you know, go better for K-State. You could see K-State getting a little better after that Fort Hays State embarrassment. You could see them getting a little bit better. You could see them growing as a team. You could see some guys developing. And then they had the big win against Iowa State on the road to open up Big 12 play. And then they come home and they play TCU close. They had a bad start, but then they did play a wire and had a chance to win that game late. And then this same K-State team, even after that, they went on the road to Texas Tech and made it a game. And they played them well. This same Baylor team that beat them by 50, yes, they lost to by 30 at home, but they went wire to wire. I mean, they played them even in the second half at home. I mean, yeah, Baylor was up by near 30 at halftime, but K-State came out of the locker room and they played them about even. I think the second half score in that game was like 44-42. And so K-State didn't give up. They kept fighting. And Antonio Gordon, I believe, if I recall correctly, had a really big second half in that game. And so, you know, you see what they did then, and it's just gone, all right? It's totally gone. And you don't see that fight. You don't see that grit. You don't see that growth. You don't see the progression. You don't see any of the things that you want to see from this team right now. And at what point, when you're K-State, do you say, this is embarrassing, this is ridiculous, we're not going to allow for this at our university? I don't think that it will get to that point. But if I'm Gene Taylor, I don't know how Gene doesn't give Bruce a call and say, you know what, Bruce, I said that, you know, I'd be patient with this season and I will be, but this, you better turn this around. Like, I'm not saying you need to win games, but you need to turn this around because that's unacceptable. Like, what has happened these last two games against West Virginia, against Baylor? That's not okay. And you need to fix it, because if that's what we're going to continue to see on the court, that's not going to fly. So I'm not saying that you need to go win every game, but I want to see a better product on the court than that. Like, I think Gene needs to do that. I think Gene needs to let Bruce know that's not okay.
you got to put a better product on the court. That doesn't mean you need to win every game, but you need to put a better product on the court. I think it's as simple as that. And, you know, hopefully that can happen because, like I said, when I hear Bruce talk, he seems comfortable. He made a joke after the West Virginia game that, oh, man, if this is the regular West Virginia teams of the past, I mean, we would have got the ball past half court. Ha, ha, ha. You know?
I read that. Yeah. I read that tweet.
Last time we played Baylor, didn't we lose by infinity? Ha, 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 ha. No, you lost by 20 less points than you did tonight, Bruce. It's like, come on, man. Like, really? Like, are you okay with it? Like, you know, come on. Like, it's just frustrating. You just want to see more than just a lifeless group of players out there just getting their ass handed to them for 40 minutes. And so, you know, we'll see if we see something different against Texas A&M, because Texas A&M's going to be a good measuring stick, because I did take a peek at it, and they're 500 overall, and they have a losing record in the SEC. I think they were 1-3 in the SEC and 7-7 overall, I believe. So they're not lighting it up. And you would think that it's an opportunity for K-State to at least play a close game, at least. So if K-State comes out and they get blown out against Texas A&M, I think that's really going to raise a red flag on what's going on. So I think we'll learn a lot from that game, where K-State is and is not. Because the fact of the matter is, the A&M game, and I don't mean to jump ahead of you or anything, but with A&M, it could be used a couple different ways. You go into that game and you play a close game where you get a win, maybe that can recharge K-State, and it can give them enough juice to play some competitive games down the stretch. Not saying that they're going to win them, but maybe they can play KU and Texas and Tech a little more competitive. If you go and you get blown out by A&M at home, boy, I mean, how do you get out of that and then go play KU, Texas, and Tech in the next three and not just feel the lifeless team? I mean, how would that not suck all the energy out of you getting blown out by a team that was the one team on the schedule that you might actually have a chance to beat? So, you know, I think we'll learn a lot from them on Saturday.
You're listening to the Purple Project Podcast.
Big 12 SEC this weekend. K-State's opponent, K-State fan, A&M, back in Bramlage, Saturday on ESPNU, 11 o'clock tip. And yeah, that's going to be it. And we can go on all night, but we're going to put a pin on this conversation right here. Yeah, K-State, that's going to be interesting to see how they do against A&M. And I will go a little bit further and say that, I mean, a few moments ago I said I don't see a victory stretch here. But A&M, yeah, they're 7-7 overall. They're at the bottom of the conference. They're 2-6, correct you, in conference play there. They lost the last three or four with one postponed of Vanderbilt. And you got to go back. They've lost last couple weeks, last really 5 or 6 when you look at it. So maybe there's glimmer. Now, I'm the optimism here on the podcast tonight. Maybe there is some little hope for K-State in this instance here. But yeah, I mean, if they go in this game, you get embarrassed by A&M, who is struggling in the SEC. I mean, yeah, they have a 500 record, which is not very impressive. 2-6, they ain't impressive either in the conference play, so it's worse against worst team when you look at this team. So if K-State gets their butts butts blown out at home and losing double digits against A&M Saturday like they did against West Virginia. Now, I mean, I'm not comparing West Virginia to A&M. Obviously, West Virginia is a very good team, as we all know, in the conference play. But if we lose to A&M in double digits, yeah, there is something wrong there. And yeah, that's going to be racing up with a couple of red flags there. And you're right. And I agree 100%. You're supposed to be getting better, improving each and every game, and not going the other direction. And it seems like it's going, the scale is bouncing the wrong way for K-State, who brought in this talented freshman class this year. And we've seen a lot of inconsistency from this team. And are you getting enough out of all your guys? And right now, I don't think they are. So that's going to be a question mark. And we will definitely come back to this. We'll see what they do against A&M. And we'll find out for sure what questions will be answered there. And speaking of questions answered, let's talk about the women's basketball team who lost over the weekend to KU by 7. And after another strong start, and we talked about this last week of the podcast, how this seems to be a theme for Jeff Manning's team all year long. And then Monday night, lose a backbreaker in the final 5 minutes against Oklahoma State. And K-State, they're right there with Oklahoma State at home in this game. Chrissy Carr, in my memory states correctly, scored 24 points. Was not enough in this case here. Oklahoma State absolutely dominated the fourth quarter. How many times you heard this on the podcast? K-State, whether it's, well, mainly the women, men are not even close enough to sniff the lead. The women are right there for opportunity to seize a win in the conference play. Can't do it. Gets outplayed in the last 5 minutes of the game. I believe my memory states correctly. Checking the box score the other night, 29-11, Oklahoma State all over it in the fourth quarter. And you hear these things all the time say, finish strong in the fourth quarter. Fourth quarter is important. Everybody raising their hands for the fourth quarter. Well, right now, the ladies' kryptonite is the fourth quarter. And who would have thunk it, Alex, that K-State is still winless in conference play. And tomorrow night, as we record this podcast tonight, on Wednesday night, tomorrow night, Iowa State comes into town after they lost to Iowa State on the road in their first conference game. So, man, I mean, and it looks like from what Jeff Mitty was talking about, they need more balanced scoring from their team. I mean, you hear every night, Chrissy Carr, 24 points Monday night. Ioka Lee can go off any point. That's the only two players you hear. And maybe every now and then, there's Rachel Ranke at times. You hear her, but that's all you get. That's all you get from this team, and that's not going to cut it. Two players ain't going to win you enough basketball games. You got to find – you have five players, whether it's men or women, on the floor, and kind of put Baylor as an example. Three players, everybody scored pretty much for Baylor. Everybody had a three-pointer look, seemed like tonight, right? You get balanced scoring. You have three players in double digits. Obviously, Mitchell is 31, but you're getting help from everybody else, right? That's what makes a good team. So that's what Jeff Mitty's looking for in his instance here. You got to get more production from other players besides those two, because if you're focusing, taking one player out of the equation, you already lost the game. You already lost. So you have to be more, well-balanced on offense. Try to get other players going. And whether it's on the football field, you have a lot of weapons. Use them, right? So, and right now, K-State's looking for answers in Big 12 play. You got to find somebody else. You have to find a third scorer somewhere. Rachel Ranke used to start for K-State. She's been in and out of the starting lineup, obviously, due to, Jeff Mitty. I mean, I'm not close to the team. Obviously, we're sort of outsiders from the outside in, so we don't know. We're just making guesses here on Joe P. But, they have to find that third score somewhere in there. I mean, they're talented enough to win games. They're not the men's team where they're just lackadaisical. They're starting off these games strong and not finishing. You have to find somebody else to put the basketball in their hands and go from there. So, K-State losing another game to Iowa State. They're winless. That was what I was not expecting from this team. If you were to go back even before the season started, so they need someone else to step up and start making some plays.
And that's exactly what they need. And quickly, want to correct. You correct myself, because you're right, Eddie. Texas A&M, she's jumping back quickly. I always love giving up correct myself. You're right. 2-6, in their conference play. They were 1-3 on the road. That was the statistic that I saw that was stuck in my head there, Eddie. And if you're just curious, by the way, that one win on the road was against Mississippi State by 1 point. So that was their one road win. And Mississippi State's 9-8 on the year too. But going back to the women's side, just want to throw a couple other stats, statistics at you as well.
Okay, they're laying on me.
Yeah, I'm gonna lay them on you here. If I can, I had a tab open and I jumped through a different tab. So against Oklahoma State, I'll start with that one. K-State now scores Oklahoma State in the first quarter, 14-11. K-State outscores KU in the first quarter, 16-7.
Mm-hmm.
K-State is outscored in the fourth quarter against Oklahoma State by 14 points, 25-11.
Oh, that was close. Not four off.
You were close. How much did K-State lose to Oklahoma State by?
14
points. That game was tied going into the fourth quarter. K-State lost by 14 because they crumbled. They lost, jumping back to their game against West Virginia, even though we did talk about that in the last one.
Yep.
K-State got outscored 26-9 in the fourth quarter of that game, and they lost by 9 points. That was actually a game that when they went into the fourth quarter, as we mentioned to you guys.
They're leading. They're leading the fourth quarter.
Eight.
Yeah, they're winning.
Yeah, they were up by 8 going into the fourth quarter against in the end of that game. So, going back to the KU game, though, which is the one that I was going to go back to, I mentioned that the K-State outscored them 16-7 in the first quarter. The third quarter of that game, K-State is outscored 25-16. In the fourth quarter, K-State is outscored 23-18. How much does K-State lose that game by?
Seven.
7 points. You get outscored in the second half by 14 points, and you end up losing by 7 points. You were up by 7 points going into the break. That's a problem. That's a problem. And I think you're right, Eddie. I think it starts with getting more scoring, ultimately, from this team. Now, as you mentioned, I mean, we've got to give Chris Carr credit. I mean, 24 points against KU. You mentioned she had 14 in their last game. Ayoka Lee, you're also right. She's in the thick of things as well. But, you know, they got to get some more from Goodrich. They need to get more from Mackey. You know, they need to get more from some of these players. And you mentioned it. You'll see Ranky from time to time have a good game. But there's really not a consistent third score. It's you go through the scores, you look at those box scores. It's Chrissy Carr, Ayoka Lee, and then kind of random on that third score. So K-State absolutely needs to be more consistent when it comes to that. And look, Eddie, these teams that we're talking about with K-State, these are good teams. That West Virginia team that K-State was beating by 8 going into the fourth quarter on the road, that team is 12-2 on the year, 6-2 in Big 12 play. They're ranked. And you almost went to their place and won. That Oklahoma State team that we talked about, that team is 11-5 overall, 7-3 in Big 12 play. That's a good basketball team. The killer for K-State is this KU team. This KU team is not a very good team. This is a team that K-State is better than, in my opinion. They're 6-6 on the year and 2-4 in conference play. And yes, K-State
yeah,
is better. But I'm sorry, you know, I believe this K-State team is better than that KU team. So I mentioned last week on the podcast, you've got to go into Allen Fieldhouse and find a way to get that game. You have got to find a way to get it. It's against your arch rival. It's a chance to turn things around. You're the better team. And they just couldn't do it. They just couldn't do it. And we continue to see the same old trend. And it just makes you just like, when? Like, when is this going to break? Maybe it happens against Iowa State. you know, that'd be great if it did. But I would say shape has kind of turned out to be a good team. I mean, I didn't think that they'd be as good as they are, but they're 10-5 overall, and 6-2 and in Big 12 play. And so, you know, K-State's got them on the ledger coming up. And then they've got, after that, they've got Oklahoma. And you'd assume Oklahoma would be a winnable game for them, because Oklahoma's also 5-7, and they're 2-5 in Big 12 play. And then they'll have Texas Tech, and they'll have a chance against them because they're not great either. But then you got Baylor. So, you know, it doesn't get any easier for K-State. There is a stretch on the back end, Eddie, where the schedule kind of lightens up a little bit. But I don't think that the strength of the schedule has been K-State's problem. I don't think it matters who they're playing. I really don't. I don't think it matters who they're playing. I just think that they're not finishing, period. End of discussion. It doesn't matter who's on the other side of the court. So I don't know how much really we really can glean from looking at the schedule, saying, well, like, you know, it's a little lighter here, and, well, it's a little tougher here. I still think it matters. I mean, they're starting strong against nearly everybody, and they're playing bad at the end there against near everybody. So I think it's going to take them finishing a game to kind of right this ship. And, you know, I don't know when that's going to happen. Maybe hopefully it happens against Iowa State, but I just don't know when that is going to happen. And I think when it happens, then maybe they can roll off, you know, can kind of roll off some wins. But going to KU and losing, and losing the Oklahoma State game, K-State, in my opinion, has really flushed any chances that they had at any postseason down the drain. And at this point, you're playing for pride, and it's disappointing, because coming into the season, I thought this was a team that was poised to end up at the NCAA tournament. Really did. You know, you looked at the roster, and you thought this is a really good roster of with a nice mix of some young and veteran players in it, and you know, they could do some damage, and unfortunately they just have not done it, and they've been close, but they haven't been there. And if we saw what they were doing for the men's team, we'd be like, oh yeah, look at them, they're improving, you know, they're
yeah,
better, you know, we're closer, but you know what, this women's team's held to, they're held to a different standard, Eddie. They're held to a different standard. This is a team that we expected more coming into the season than the men's team, and they're not living up to it. It's disappointing, and you just hope that they can go get that win first. I have trust in Jeff Mitty, but he's got to figure it out too. And you know, I don't think that anybody needs to light a fire under his ass, because I think that he I don't think that he is really loving this. Not saying that Bruce isn't loving it. That's not very good comparison. But point being, I think that Jeff Mitty is I think he's, I don't think he's liking what he's seeing. I'll put it that way. I don't think he likes what he sees. I think he wants it fixed ASAP. So I think eventually it will get turned around, and they'll get it. But I just don't know when it'll happen, Eddie. And it's even more deflating the more times you see it happen, because we've been talking about this since literally November with this basketball team. Literally the second game of the year. The second game of the year is when we first brought this up in the Kentucky game. And we looked at it as, oh, well, yeah, look, they're competing with Kentucky, and look how they're close. Look how close they are. And the conversation has turned to, from look how close they are to, they can't finish. They can't finish.
Yeah.
So the conversation's taking a total turn. And they can't finish right now. So that's just the reality of the situation.
Yeah, K-State has lost. Women's team, K-State famous, lost 5 in a row. Lost 5 in a row. You're 5-7 overall. And you're the only team that has no wins in the conference. Yeah. So you got to figure it out at some point. And this team's problem is not finishing games. And it continues to be the pattern this year, unfortunately, for this team. Which, yeah, we thought that, man, at least, you know, they can get finish in the top half. They have the team with the right mixture, unlike the men's team, veteran players like you mentioned, and a lot of young talent that's over there. But like last week, what I talked about, these turnovers, a bunch of turnovers. Grugerich, I think, had 10 turnovers in that game last week. So, again, you can't turn the ball over like the men's team did tonight. So, you're 0-5 in the conference. You're the only team that has a win, don't have a win in the conference. I'll be a little bit embarrassed.
Yeah.
If I'm Jeff Mitty, with the team that you have, the quality of talent that you have, I'd be embarrassed. So, 0-5, you got Iowa State coming in here tomorrow night in Manhattan. Iowa State is third in the conference, 6-2 with a 10-5 overall record in the game. They're coming off and lost themselves. So, question is for K-State moving over, can they finish these games? It'll be interesting to see what they can do against Iowa State. They lost to Iowa State earlier in the season, their first conference game. They actually lost in double digits to Iowa State, if my memory serves correctly there. So, K-State, they got
Eddie, I think they lost close to third.
I think it was 20 or
91-69.
Yeah, so. K-State, yeah, they're going to have their hands full with Iowa State tomorrow night. And, man, the forecast is cloudier and cloudier for both teams as we move along in the basketball.
I got to point this out, too. I'm sorry, I just took a look at that Iowa State box score. Take a guess at how that box score went.
Guess what? The same thing.
You can't make it up. They were winning at halftime and lost by 22. That's Iowa State.
Jeez.
So you outscored by 13 in the third quarter and 12 in the fourth quarter, and you lose by 22. So it happened in the Iowa State game. It literally happened against this team back in that game.
God, pretty much set the tone.
That's how big their second half collapse was. 25-point collapse in second half.
Pretty much set the tone for the Big 12 conference of the women there. You lead that game and you basically lay an egg in the second half. So K-State. We'll see which team shows up. That's for sure. But they have to finish all four quarters. That's the bottom line. There is you know you can play with the best team except for Baylor. Take them out of the equation. But West Virginia, you play with them. Other team than that, you can play with these other teams. So, but yeah, that's funny in a wrong way. But unfortunately, that's been the pattern for Jeff Mitty's squad this year. And we'll have to find out what happens tomorrow night against the Iowa State Cyclones. We're going to step aside real quick.
You're listening to the Purple Project Podcast.
EG3, Eddie Greer, Double A, Alex Aiden, a couple of K-State alums, / Wildcat 91.9 alums, the Student Association in Manhattan, K's, the Corporate Project Podcast, rolls on this late Wednesday night after K-State gets basically thumped by Baylor for the second straight time this year. Baylor put up 100 points in the first meeting and put up 107 tonight on the lackadaisical effort of the K-State men's team. So, on that, while we're rolling on a negative situation, we talked a little bit off air about this former K-State team player that brought a lot of drama to the team last year. That's none other, and this is how bad it is, Alex. I forgot this guy played at K-State. That's how bad this is. Cartier Jada. You guys remember him?
Buffalo last year with Bruce actually on the sideline.
Yep, the old talking back to Bruce after turning the ball over against Texas Tech there. Tremendous turnaround there where he was going in for a dunk, misses the dunk, and then Texas Tech player turns around and basically a four-point swing, if you want to call it like that, and then he and Bruce go out on the sideline there where everybody can see it on national television. So yeah, I mean, all of the talent that this cat had, and it pretty much all went to waste after that. Pretty much, I mean, he had a good game here and there, but this was the guy, Alex, that was going to be that man, that guy, that veteran leader that you're looking for, but instead, he turned the opposite direction and caused all sorts of drama in the locker room and all this other stuff. And then it caused Bruce Weber to lose the locker room, which was rumored to be this year too with this team, especially after the Fort Hays State loss and now all that other stuff like that. And then, of course, Jada Cartier transfers to Virginia Tech, where, of course, Chester Frazier, I might be getting there, I might, Chester Frazier or somewhere in there, you can correct me on that, he went over to the Virginia Tech team. So he was the one that brought over, he basically followed Coach Chester over there to Virginia Tech. Now, I've been reading, now, when his name resurfaced to me, it was right after, Alex, it was right after the podcast last week that I recorded. Somebody mentioned him to me. I'm like, what? So, when I heard this news, like, Cardi Jada quit the team. Now, I've been reading reports since then about he opted out. But the latest report saying a lot of birdies in my ear saying that he quit the team. So what a 180 swing for probably a talent just like him. Obviously, he was a part of the Elite Eight run of K-State a couple years ago, coming off the bench and then eventually starting there in place of Dean Wade there getting hurt, unfortunately.
He was huge for K-State in that Elite Eight run.
Yeah, he was big time in that run there. And probably without him, I mean, yes, Dean Wade, I mean, yeah, that's a whole other discussion there, obviously. But yeah, without Cardi Jada, they don't make that deep run there. But yeah, last year, you know, caused all that drama and not putting in, like, kind of what we saw tonight with this K-State men's team there. Not putting in all the effort, kind of what Cardi Jada did, getting called out by Fran Rachel last year for not pulling out his weight.
Totally forgot about that.
Yeah. See, and then it pretty much just carried over for the rest of the year. Obviously, just a 180 swing. All that talent that he had, and then it all just went to waste. Now, obviously, I mean, we're on the outside looking in, so I'm just hearing stuff, listening to stuff on their podcasts. So, I don't know for sure, but that's the rumor right now that he just quit the team. And I mean, there are articles are out there that he did opt out, especially here, the Manhattan Mercury here in town said that. So Alex, man, what a turn of events from just a promising guy that, oh man, he's going to be the next star at K-State, and he just fought off the face of the planet.
Yeah, you know, he did, and while he was actually, he began, the announcement that he opted out due to personal reasons related to COVID, I think that announcement came in mid-December, and he was not having that bad of a year, if I recall. I think he was averaging, as I'm pulling it up at this exact moment, but yeah, he was averaging 7.5 points a game. He was averaging 7.5 points a game. He was averaging about 44% from the field. He was playing fine. You know, he was playing good. Good basketball. He played 20 minutes a game. You know, like I said, you know, he wasn't putting up what he put up at K-State that last year, because he did average 13 points a game, because he was really one of K-State's main guys. Last year, but I mean, his first 2 years at K-State, he was shooting mid-40s, averaging around 7 points a game, and he got back to that at Virginia Tech. You know, he was also averaged mid-20s minutes per game in his first two seasons at K-State. He was averaging about 20 minutes at Virginia Tech, and so, just based on looking at the statistics, it seems that he was getting back to kind of the pretty job that we saw the first 2 years in K-State. Now, I didn't watch him there, so I don't know all those details, because if you look at the statistics from last season, they don't look that bad either, you know, because he averaged over 13 points a game. He shot 41% from the field, you know, averaged over 31 minutes a game, and all the stats were relatively similar. So, I mean, you couldn't really tell in the stat sheet last year that he was playing worse, in my opinion, than what his stats showed, and that could have been the case this year. But looking at the statistics, it seemed like he was a useful contributor to the team. So,
you know, when that announcement came out, you know, that was something that I wasn't aware of. And you know, it's hard because you don't know all the details behind what goes on. You know, what I read didn't really shed a lot of light into what happened. It just said that Carney Ajayi did not have COVID, and that was not the reason that he opted out, and that, you know, that he wasn't full support of his decision to opt out at that particular time. You know, but his acting app didn't really provide a lot more detail, so we don't know, is there a family member he was going to see? Is there something going on? We also know a lot of times, if things aren't going great, maybe a player transfers out, or they opt out, or they do something here or there, and then that's their way of getting out of the situation. Not saying that's what Carney Ajayi did, I'm not accusing him of that at all, but look, I mean, we saw some K-State football players this year transfer when things weren't going their way in the middle of COVID season. And they didn't leave the team because of COVID concerns. They left the team because they weren't happy with what was going on, or the coaches weren't happy with what was going on, and that was the end result. So it's been happening this year in football, in basketball, and I'm not saying that's it, but that could be. I mean, it could be that he left the team and, you know, wasn't happy with his role, wasn't happy with something that was going on, and, you know, maybe the coaches encouraged him to leave the team because they weren't happy with something that he was doing, and or maybe he did have a family matter that he wanted to attend to, or he just wasn't comfortable with it, which totally understand. If you're not comfortable with it, and that's a player's decision to make, and you know, it's a big decision. So, with Carney, the thing with Carney is I never had an issue with him, to be 100% honest. The 100% odds of you, Eddie. John Kurtz put it best last year. He said, Carney's that fun uncle. And I've said this in the podcast before. I said it when we went back in the summer when we did our preview of the men's team. But John Kurtz said, Carney's that fun uncle that, you know, you're excited to see. And, you know, he does all these cool tricks and things when you're around. And you just always want to be with your fun uncle. You know, you always want to be with him. You always want to hang out with him. You think he's so cool. But once it comes time for the fun uncle to take responsibility and be a dad, he can't do it. He can't do it. He doesn't have, you know, he just doesn't have the responsibility. And he's a lot more fun to be around when he's a fun uncle than he is when he's your dad and doesn't have any responsibility, or has a lot more responsibility. Excuse me. So I thought it was a good comparison because when Carney was the side piece at K-State, he was fun. We all loved him. He's flying around. He's making plays. We all, you know, what's Carney going to do next? Oh, I can't wait to see him in the game. This and that. And then when Carney had to take over the team, and it was his team, totally different Carney. Could not handle the responsibility. Could not handle. He could not handle that, you know, the weight that was on his shoulders. And it really, in my opinion, really prove that he's a sidekick. You know, he's not a guy that's meant to lead the team, carry a team. He's a piece. You know, he is a piece that you pair with a core. And that's where he's most effective, because that core can hold him and his strong personality in check. Not that there's anything wrong with a strong personality, but can hold his strong personality in check. And then he flourishes. That's really where he flourishes, and that's where teams flourish. So, you know, I thought that was a good analogy by John Kurtz, because he's a fun uncle, but he's not necessarily the dad that you want with the responsibility of actually taking care of a child. But yeah, so, you know, with Carney, I wish him the best, Eddie, you know, with whatever's going on with him. If he did leave the team, and just because he didn't like the way things were going or whatever it was, that, you know, that's obviously that would obviously be disappointing. But, you know, with COVID, we may figure it out, because with COVID, NCAA is throwing all these eligibility rules out there. So you don't know about
eligibility and how many extra years of eligibility you could have and what could happen under this scenario and what could happen over that under that scenario. So you never know. Maybe there's a way Cardi comes back next year and we see him again. You just don't know. So, we'll just have to wait and see. Like I said, I'm not exactly 100% sure on what the NCAA eligibility rules are for college basketball. I know what they were for football. I don't know what they are for basketball. But either way, it's kind of a... It would kind of stink if that's kind of the way his college basketball career ended, especially when you look at those first 2 years that he had at K-State where he was really trending up. He got an EMA tattoo on him. And so, hey, I mean, yeah, I guess he'll carry EMA with him forever, unless he had the tattoo removed. And it's not very out, but yeah, I don't think that seems like a big hassle. So you never know it. But look, it's just kind of a shame. I don't think that we saw that coming. You know, after the 2 years he had at K-State, I thought that we thought he was going to be a big part of what K-State did moving forward there the last couple of years. And so it's unfortunate it didn't happen. Hopefully nothing bad happened to Virginia Tech with them. And, maybe we get to see him on the basketball court again. But, I wish him all the best. And hopefully, he's healthy and he's happy and his family's healthy and they're happy and, get through this difficult time kind of come out on the other end.
Yeah, so we'll see what happens there. Yeah, so I'm just hearing some chatter around here in Manhattan about that. So wanted to bring that up to your attention as well. But yeah, Cardi, we'll have to see what his next move is. If we hear anything, we'll definitely talk about it here on Triple P, the Purple Project Podcast. All right, folks, here we're going to close out this pod episode tonight. I know it's been basketball heavy due to K-State playing Baylor tonight and getting absolutely dominated by Baylor tonight in this game. So we'll end this podcast tonight with, I'm going to revisit the whole Stanford K-State opening game here in September here coming up. Obviously, there's still been a lot of chatter about that here in Manhattan, Kansas as well. The series, well, we recorded it. We talked about this on, I think it was two episodes ago, that if you have been living under a rock, well, things have happened since then. Well, K-State, Stanford, they will be moving their matchup to Arlington, to Jerry's World, to start off the season for Kansas State. Obviously, K-State coming off with a good start to the year, ending in a 5-7 record there this past year. And this was originally supposed to be a home game for K-State. This got moved to Jerry's World due to money. And we all know, what happened with this pandemic, and we're still in it still, but yeah, losing a lot of money and not having a full slate of students/fans in the stands hurt as well. So, and even prior to this move, K-State was still looking for that possibility to host that game now. Obviously, the last big home game, and we talked about this two episodes ago, was Auburn, and in this place was buzzing, and you got to go back maybe the year before that where me and Dan Page called the Miami game. That was a fun game in itself. We talked about this on Triple P. That was a fun game. So I do see both sides of it. For one, first for the homies here in Manhattan, Kansas, right. So, I definitely get that. I mean, I'd be ticked too if, we didn't get the game at home. And obviously, Vanderbilt, the big name, well, supposed to be quote-unquote big name. Obviously, Vanderbilt sucked this year, but they're in the news for something else, for the good kicker from the soccer team coming on there. That was a wonderful story there. But
that was a good story, yeah.
But taking that aside, Vanderbilt was not a good football team this year. So, K-State could have taken them to the woodshed there at that point. So, but K-State, this was a big-time opponent at home, Pac-12 opponent at home. You have a chance to do something big. It'll fill the seats up. Now, again, putting the pandemic in here, I don't know if this game would have stayed in Manhattan. Now, I don't know. Now, the fall's a good opportunity still to get that stadium, Bill Steiner Family Stadium, back-packed like it usually is for game day. Now, I don't know the situation, the fan situation. We still got a long, long ways to go till September about that. But still, though, I mean, to have that game right here in your own backyard would have been something for this community, this town. And it's a moneymaker, right? So now you flip the script. Now, this game moving to Jerry World, and we talked about the whole stack of alumni. Hope y'all listening to the Purple Project podcast, y'all, down in Dallas-Fort Worth area, one of the biggest, if not the biggest, alumni cities that K-State grads go to down there. So, again, I mean, going to Jerry's World, and they have a football team down there, and we know Jerry Jones likes to make that money, so, and both of these teams are going to get a lot of money, Alex. I mean, a lot of money. So basically, K-State, this is still a home game for them. I mean, Stanford, I said this two episodes ago. Stanford, they're going to have to come, if they do come at all, they're going to have to come from out west where it's very strict out there to where, you know, they've been very strict about pandemic rules and whatnot. Spectators can come out to certain sporting events or not. So you flip the script over to Texas, right? K-State has a whole bunch of fans, whole bunch of alumni in the Midwest, and you can still pack that thing full of purple still. So technically, if not even bigger here in Manhattan, but it's bigger down there in Arlington. So, I mean, I don't know if you had any more thoughts on it. I'm sure you do, but I'd like to hear still your continued thoughts on it, and I'm sure we'll talk about this more moving forward. But yeah, you know, in looking at a past article here, you know, it was promised to Gene Taylor's the discussion with Gene Taylor about 2.8 million a payday for this event here. So yeah, I mean, Auburn was mentioned in here, and of course two years ago, Mississippi State, they beat them on the road at Mississippi State. K-State did. So, I mean, K-State knows how to get for these big games. And the big deal, the big issue is here, 8 home games originally scheduled, right? And now you have technically 7 here at Bill Steiner. And you got to go down to Texas for one of them. So, you have 8 home games. Like, I just pretty much did the math right there. So, I mean, for what it is, I mean, fans, they can be, if they're still upset or not. I mean, will they come around when it comes September? We'll find out. We'll find out for sure. We'll have a lot more discussion on that as, I mean, football's on sort of a hiatus right now. But you got to look at it from that point. I mean, the universe, every university is trying to recover from this pandemic. So, I mean, K-State, they took the big time road. They won that money, and they're gonna get it.
Yeah, you know, that's interesting you mentioned that, because that's a good point. You know, look, you know, I don't think we talked about that much in our last episode. The fact that there is a big financial gain that comes with playing in this game, and you know, we knew it last time we talked. We didn't talk much about it because, in my opinion, there were some other points that needed to be kind of brought to light within all of that. But yeah, there's no doubt. You get a financial gain from that. You get a financial bump from that. And after the season that K-State has had, from an athletic standpoint, and all the revenue that they've lost, because we know they have lost millions upon millions upon millions. I know I broke down some numbers. It was a while ago. I broke down some numbers that Gene shared on, I think it was K-Man, about some of the projection models, and they were way down. And so, yeah, I mean, look, you've got an opportunity to be able to kind of, you know, get a little infiltrate your bottom line, so to speak. You know, you want the revenue to outweigh the costs, and here's a chance to be able to get some more revenue. And, you know, while people don't like that, you got to make tough decisions. And this, you know, not that this was a tough decision, but, you know, it's not just sporting, you know, sport departments that are having to make decisions like this. Companies all across the U.S. are making decisions based on financial gain. I mentioned this before. My company, we got rid of our office. And, in fact, I think our rent is up, or we're breaking our lease here, like, the end of the month, here within a week. And so, you know, I had to go in a week or two ago and, you know, clear my office out, even though I still work from home, and, you know, take some stuff home, and you know, now I get a stipend and going to work from home with the monthly stipend, and, you know, it's going to save the company money. You know, you figure out, hey, you can be as effective at home as you can at work, if not more effective, because you're not traveling, and, you know, that time's not taken out of your day to the office, and you can get the same amount of work done that saves us money. So, you know, we're gonna make that decision because that will help our revenue. Just one example, just a small example of, look, departments, companies, businesses are having to make decisions daily right now about what they can do to have the revenues outweigh the costs, and some difficult decisions. In this particular case, I don't think it was a difficult decision. And because I think you should do it even if things are normal. And I know that may not be the most popular thing to say in the world, but playing in the Allstate, not the Allstate, yes, yeah, the
Allstate Golf Classic. Name,
but to play in that, I think that there's tons of benefits. I think one thing that should be pointed out that you mentioned was that K-State was slated to have 8 home games this year, because there's some seasons where that's rare. It's rare that K-State has 8 home games. Usually it's 6 or 7. Usually you've got a non-con game sprinkled in there, or you've got 4 home Big 12 games and 5 road Big 12 games. Well, this year was an odd year that K-State had all 3 non-cons at home, and they were slated to have 5 Big 12 games at home. So they had the very odd 8-game home schedule. That is rare. That doesn't happen very often. And so, as I mentioned, 6 or 7 is usually a little more likely than 8. I shouldn't say 6 is more likely than 8. 7 is usually the most likely number, and I'd say 6 and 8 are probably on par with each other. But point being, you don't get 8 most years. That doesn't happen. So if you're K-State, you see it, and you say, this is a perfect year to do something like that, because we still get 7 home games. We're still going to get 7 home games. That was how many home games K-State would have gotten this past year if they had their full schedule. They would have had 7 home games. So
yeah.
So if you're K-State, because they had the 3 non-cons and they had 4 home Big 12 games. So if you're K-State, it's a perfect time from that scheduling standpoint to do something like this. But the bigger thing that I brought up the last episode is that this is huge for number one, the alumni, number two, the recruiting, and number three, exposure. And just quickly to break them down in order of what I just said. Number one was the alumni. You mentioned it. K-State's got a huge, I cannot emphasize how big the alumni group for K-State in the DFW, Dallas-Fort Worth area is. It is huge. I did not live in DFW. I lived a couple counties away in Wichita County, Wichita Falls, about a couple hours out of Dallas, probably about an hour and a half out of Fort Worth. And so, while I was not literally infiltrated into that group, I saw it, and I knew of it down there, and it was pretty hard to miss. So, K-State has a huge group, alumni group. In Texas that you can really, in Dallas in particular, that they can be able to drum up. They can drum them up. You can drum that whole entire base up for this game, the whole base that you don't typically get to target. So you get to target a different group, a different demographic. one of your biggest demographics. Oh, and mentioning recruiting, let's dive into that because it's perfect. Texas. That's one of the biggest states that K-State recruits in, the state of Texas. You're going to the biggest, to the gym of football in Texas, Jerry World. As dumb as it sounds, a lot of those recruits in the state of Texas are going to watch K-State in Jerry World, and a lot of them wouldn't have watched K-State play Stanford in Bill Snyder Family Stadium. No slight to Bill Snyder Family Stadium. But the truth of the matter is, there's going to be a lot more recruits that see this game because of where it's played. And you're playing it in their backyard in Texas. You're playing it in Jerry World, a place that all those high school recruits want to play. So they see you there and they say, oh, I want to be at K-State because I want to play in that stadium. And then K-State has a chance to bring recruits out. K-State's going to be able to have the chance to bring recruits out to the game for visits and do those types of things and be able to take advantage of it. Be like, you know what, yeah, let's get these Texas recruits that we're targeting. You know, let's bring them on some visits. Let's get them on the field. Let's get them on the sidelines. Let's expose them to our fan base down here in Dallas. And let's drum up that excitement for these recruits. And then the third is exposure. You look at the exposure. I mentioned this. I'll mention it again. There is a difference from an 11 a.m. FS1 game with Tim Brando than there is from your 7 p.m. game with Gus and Joel, Gus Johnson and Joel Klatt, or Kirk Street and Chris Fowler. There's a big difference there. There's a big difference in exposure. You're talking about two totally different platforms, two totally different stages that you're playing on. And I joke that I say that, and now K-State's going to end up playing at 11 a.m. in this game because I've said that so many times. Tim Brando's going to be calling the K-State-Stanford game at 11 a.m. In there. But no, the fact of the matter is, you're playing on a whole other level when you're down there. And you're playing in a game that is a huge game. The All-State Kickoff Classic has had Alabama in it. It's had Florida in it. It's had huge teams, huge brands, I should say, play in this game to open the season. And you know what? When you see big schools and they're playing these huge non-conference games, they're playing it on neutral fields in these types of environments. And like it or not, that's kind of the way that it goes in this day and age of college football. And it's an opportunity. It's an opportunity that just simply is not there at Bill Snyder Family Stadium. And I get the excitement that it would bring to the people of Manhattan. I get the excitement that was drummed up around that Auburn game. I was there at the Auburn game. That game was amazing. I would have been devastated if that game was not played in Bill Snyder Family Stadium. But at the same time, you've got to understand that the benefits, in my opinion, way outweigh the benefits of playing in the Bill Snyder Family Stadium. I think that it's not even close. You know, it's a no-brainer in my decision if you're K-State. And if
oh, hang on, folks. We got a problem. EG3-4, the Purple Project Podcast. We lost him for a second there. We gotta get him back on the line here real quick. Here he is.
You know what, Eddie? What happened is my phone said you're wrong, Alex. So shut up. My phone had heard enough of me. It said, you know, I don't want to hear you. I don't want to hear you ranting about K-State and Stanford anymore. So I'm literally gonna hang up.
It just did it again. we have technical issues late here on the Pro Project Podcast. We got Alex coming back on the line right now. Let's see if we can get him back on here real quick. You did it again.
And the third one was my cat. My cat just said, I've heard enough of you, because right when I redialed you, she knocked the phone right out of my hand and hung the phone up. So I apologize. That was Ella. the third time. The first time, I don't know what happened, but that second time, that was Ella. She didn't want to. She didn't want to hear it. She didn't want to hear it anymore. So she just knocked the phone out of my hand and hung it up. But to end my point in a very odd way.
Yeah.
the benefits of playing in AT&T Stadium way outweigh the benefits of playing in Bill Snyder Family Stadium. You make a lot more money. You get a lot more exposure. You get to really draw up that fan base down there. It's going to be a home game. The fact of the matter is, I don't see Stanford fans traveling out for that game. K-State's going to have a ton of fans there. And there's going to be a ton of K-State fans that go, especially from Kansas City. It's a really easy trip from Kansas City to go down to Dallas, so I think a lot of them will go down there. And I think the place will be packed purple. And K-State's going to have the rights to the pregame music, the pump-up videos, and all those different things, so it's going to be a home game for K-State as far as I'm concerned. And then we'll see how this factors into it, but you know, President Biden announced today that he expects that all Americans will be vaccinated by the end of the summer. So, you know, if that indeed is the truth, and that does happen, there could be a possibility we've got a full stadium down at AT&T Stadium. And if you can pack a stadium with 80,000 people down there in purple, that's a big deal. I mean, that is a big deal. There's no doubt about that. The type of what that could do for K-State's brand. To be on the national stage and have that stadium packed, that is way more valuable than anything that they could do at Bill Snyder Family Stadium. And the players are pumped. The players are pumped to go down there. I know a lot of fans are disappointed about it, but the players are excited to go down there. They don't share the same sentiment as the fans, as some of the fans do, I should say, in this. And I understand. I 100% understand the fans that say, no, this is dumb. It should be played here in Bill Snyder Family Stadium. You know, the money that it will bring into Manhattan, we don't get opportunities like this very often. All great points. I see you. I hear you. I just don't agree with you. Personally, I think that K-State is doing the right thing. I think that they should take opportunities like these when they come because, you know, that's how you build your brand right there. That's how you build your brand. That's how you improve your recruiting. And that's how you ultimately, you know, up your football program. So I think K-State's doing the right thing. And personally, I'm really excited for the game. I can't wait to see K-State in AT&T Stadium running out there, playing Stanford on that stage. And if K-State beats Stanford on that stage, that's just even more benefit. That's just even more benefit to your program when it comes to all those things.
Yeah, that's right, that's right, that's right. Eddie Greer, Alex Ann, the Purple Project Podcast, about to close things up there. So definitely, that'll be big there if K-State can pull it out against Stanford. So much more about this game in the upcoming episodes leading up to that big game, the first game of the 2021 season for K-State in September against Stanford. So much to talk about, so much to talk about, so much to get into. As we continue on the Triple P, the Purple Project Podcast, so I want to put a pin on this discussion for right now. So, Alex, my man, it's 11:17 here in Manhattan, Kansas. Time for me to wrap things up here on a podcast here tonight. You got any last words before we sign up this week?
Well, I guess I need to apologize for my cat hanging up the phone on you, Eddie. That was very nice to do that. She woke up from her evening nap and said, "Nah, I'm gonna go screw with Alex." So that's what she did. But now, you know, Eddie, for me, I don't know what to say to K-State fans right now. It's tough. It's a tough time. Just hang in there. I know I say it every week, but just hang in there and you know, better times are ahead for them and. You know, hopefully we can see a win from a team. I think we just need to see a win from
somebody.
Maybe we get lucky and get a couple this weekend. Maybe we get one from the men's and women's. I don't know, but I'll just take one from anybody at this point. And I'll also just throw out there any Chiefs fans listening. We'll see if we can run it back in 2 weeks. So
less than 2 weeks.
hoping we can. We'll see. We'll see what happens in that. But the Chiefs played great, Eddie, last weekend. I thought that it was actually probably their best game of the year, in my opinion. I think they played really well against the Bills. I think they played very close to a complete game. At one point, they were up 38-15 in that game against the Bills, who had just been on fire. They were 11-1 their last 12 games. The only loss they had was a Hail Mary pass against them by Kyler Murray and DeAndre Hopkins and the Cardinals. And they've been blowing teams out. So see the Chiefs be able to come out and flex like that in the AFC Championship was really nice to see. And yeah, we'll see what they do against those Bucks that you know pretty well. We'll see what they do against them in the Super Bowl in a couple weeks here. But yeah, they're pretty much keeping my sanity going right now, Eddie, because if I didn't have them, I don't know what I'd do. So,
yeah, you better enjoy it. You better enjoy it, because after, no matter what the outcome is, next Sunday, and we'll talk about that game a little more on next week's edition of the weekly edition of the Triple P. Save some of that. But yeah, definitely better enjoy it while you can, because I don't think it's getting any better now. But K-State, they do have an opportunity to keep the Aggies close, hopefully. So we'll see what happens this weekend on that front.
Fingers crossed, man.
Fingers crossed. The women's side got Iowa State in Bramlage tomorrow night. Now, I mean, they can play with them for a half. They got to put a full four quarters together here, and we'll see if it's a different outcome for them. They need to win conference play. Somebody's got to come up big. So, see what happens.
They need a third score. They need someone to break out with Chrissy Carne-Okale. That's just what they need. They need that third person to have a big game just to give them that nudge over the top.
Yep, they need somebody in there to step up in the second half of the season for them, and they're going to have any chance to turn their season around. So we'll see what happens there. But the other lone positive probably is the track team, which we'll talk about in the next edition of the podcast, and I'm sure I'm going to have a couple of dailies on that as well. They won their track meet a couple of weeks ago, the Triangular with KU and Wichita State. So they're going to be going at it here with another big meet this weekend. I'll talk about that on the weekly edition here, the summary on Friday morning. So definitely check that out, as well as the other podcast, or I would say other episodes of the Triple P podcast. Check that out as well, K-State fam. Whether you listen to the podcast, whether you're here in Manhattan, out there in California, or down south, Oklahoma, Dallas-Fort Worth area, y'all know what to do. The Pearl Project podcast is moving and grooving here in the winter months of early 2021. So we'll see what happens then. So until then, Alex Aiden, sir, we'll do this again next week.
Look forward to it, man. I look forward to it.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to wrap things up for another edition of the Purple Project Podcast this evening. Big thanks to Alex Aiden, my co-host, Eddie Greer III, saying thank you guys for downloading and listening to the Purple Project Podcast. Tonight, be on the lookout for this episode on a weekday, normal weekday, Friday, leading up to your weekend as well. So, like I said, a lot is going on in the campus still, and we're going to have baseball updates here shortly in the near future, so be on the lookout for that as well. But for right now, for AAEG3, we're signing out. Go Cats! We'll talk to you in the next edition of the Purple Project Podcast.
Project Podcast. Get it wherever podcasts are found on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Audio Boom, and more. We'll talk to you on the next edition of the Purple Project Podcast.